sermon from the book of Ezra. Ezra. Is that in the Old Testament? A lady said to me one time she didn't enjoy studying the Old Testament. I said, think of it as your master's family album. It will help you. Every book of the Old Testament has something to say about Jesus. And I like to look at family albums. This book especially is not just history. The sermon is called Five Steps in Getting Close to God. In Ezra, the first chapter, we're told that the children of Israel came back from captivity. Why do I need to know that? What importance is that to me? Because it's connected to the promise to Abraham that in Palestine, a Messiah would come, and it was his seed. So the first step in getting close to God is you have to be in the place where God can bless you. You have to be in the place where God can bless you. Had they not come back to Palestine, there would be no blessing, no Christ, no Messiah. The promise to Abraham could not have been kept. So when I read Ezra 1, I'm excited to know, and Ezra 2, that they did come back. And they were in the place where God blessed them. Put Galatians 3, 23 through 29, and show the people where the place of blessing is today. It's in Christ. And if you be Christ, then are you what? Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. That's the first point. The second point is found in chapter 3. The first thing they did when they came back from captivity was to build an altar. It's called the altar of consecration. I have to be in the place where God can bless me, and then I have to offer me to God. Romans 12:1. The altar of consecration was an altar of burnt offering where symbolically they offered themselves to God. I'm not convinced that I have taught this hard enough over the years, but there has to be a time when every Christian says something like this to God. Everything I have belongs to Thee. Everything I ever will be belongs to Thee. That's Romans 12:1. We have to build the altar of consecration. In the third place, we need to go to work. When they got back from captivity, the temple had not been built. And so they laid the foundation and they went to work to build that temple. According to chapter 3, that was their third step after they were in the land. And so we have to go to work. Once we become Christians, we need to find a task we can do for the Lord. And whatever it is, it's most important. The fourth thing is you have to be aware of something. If you get into the place where God can bless you and you build the altar of consecration and you go to work, Satan will come after you. So the fourth step is to remember that the adversary is coming. Chapter 4. The enemies of Judah stopped the building on the temple for 16 years. And you can go through the explanation of that. Well, if you're an elder and you're trying to do God's will, Satan's going to come after you. Preacher, he's going to do the same to you. And the closer you try to get to God, the harder he's going to work on you. He doesn't want you in God's camp. A lady told me one time that her brother made her do it. I said, ma'am, he doesn't even know you. She said, what do you mean? I said, you're not a Christian. Remember those demons said, Paul and Peter, I know, but who in the world are you? He didn't know who that exorcist was. And he pays no attention to non-Christians. So I have to remember that the enemy's coming, step 4. Step 5, chapter 5. When God saw that the work was stopped, what he did was he sent to them Zechariah and Haggai. He sent the book to them to encourage them to keep building. So I've got to turn to the book whenever Satan comes after me in order to stay close to God. That's your last point. Whenever I get discouraged, I like to read Hosea. I don't know if that makes sense to any of you, but it makes sense to me to read it. If you look at chapter 6, and it's down there around verse 13, you notice the result of all of this. They finished the house with joy. I believe it's verse 16. Yes. And the children of Israel, the priests and the Levites, kept the dedication of the house of God with joy. Tom, we'll be filled with joy if we take those five steps. You're getting close to God.
I'm Justin Hopkins. I'm working with the Lord's Church in Utopia. Good place to be. My outline comes from Psalm 133. And kind of touching on something we talked about this morning is unity. And there's 3 points. Verse 1 is the fraternity of unity. Verse 2, the fragrance of unity. And verse 3, the fruitfulness of unity. And that is very short, but dynamite comes in small packages.
I'm Don Walker. I'm with the Southwest School of Bible Studies. I'm going to give you two, but I'm going to do it rapidly. The first one is four divine principles of sacrifice. These are taken from the first five chapters of the book of Leviticus. And if you'll go through and read those chapters and the details concerning those sacrifices, I believe you'll see these principles. Number one, it must be without blemish. Has to be the very best that we have to offer. Number two, it needs to be given of a free will. It's a free will offering. We choose to do it. Number three, you'll note that as you go through those sacrifices, God is very concerned with the details, and so too we must be concerned with the details. And even when He allows some leeway, gives us the opportunity to make a decision if we're going to offer a ram or if we're going to offer a turtle dove or whatever, it's still within the parameters of what God has outlined and what He has prescribed for us. And number four, when it's offered properly, it is a sweet savor unto the Lord. And that'll preach. Believe me, I've done it. I know others have too. The next one I want to give you is based in Jeremiah chapter 6, and it's not my outline. I heard this sermon years ago. Brother Andrew Connolly preached it, and it was very impressive. And I'm sure that you'll be glad to hear at least the points and maybe even preach it. Jeremiah 6. The title of the sermon was Five Steps to Destruction. Five Steps to Destruction. You've heard that? Number one is verse 10. Behold, the word of the Lord is a reproach unto them. They do not delight in it. That's the first step to destruction. If you don't appreciate the word of God, if you don't delight in it, then you're going to be heading the wrong direction. Number two is verse 13. Because from the least of them, even to the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness. Number three is from verse 14. They are proclaiming peace, peace, when there is no peace. They say there is no need when the need is great. Number four is based on 15. They did not know how to blush. And then finally, number five is based on verse 16. They said, we will not walk in the way. Certainly it was applicable in Jeremiah's day, but sure does sound a whole lot familiar to our day now, and certainly it'll be profitable for us.
Nehemiah chapter 1. Name's Gage Coldwater. I preach in Buna, Texas. Not Buda, Buna. Here you have the prayer of Nehemiah after he has found out from his brethren concerning Jerusalem and how it's been laid waste. And it says in verse 4 that after he had heard these words, that I sat down, mourned, wept, fasted, and prayed. You have the prayer here. Here it is alliterated, the prayer. You have the covenant, verse 5. You have the commandments, verse 5. Verse 6, you have the confession. Verse 7, you have the corruption. Verse 8, you have his confidence in God. Verse 11, you have his commitment. And at the end of verse 11, it says, for I was the king's cupbearer. You have the cupbearer's role. He was a man that was honorable.
My name is Rick Brumback from Southwest School of Bible Studies. This lesson is from Micah chapter 6. Micah chapter 6, I know Brother Owens referenced that this morning. The sermon of the title is God on Trial. God on Trial. I'll tell you in advance, the entire eight verses, it's verses 1 through 8, all eight of them revolve around nomenclature, wording that fits the courtroom. So verses 1 and 2, the setting of the trial. Verses 1 and 2, the setting of the trial. And God summons the elements of the earth to be in the jury box, as it were, and to hear this discussion. Verse number 3, the charge of the trial. Verse 3, the charge of the trial. God says, what have I done wrong? Verses 4 and 5, the defendant of the trial. The defendant of the trial. And God speaks on his own behalf and says, this is how I've cared for you. Verses 6 and 7, the plaintiff of the trial. Verses 6 and 7, the plaintiff of the trial. And through Micah's pen come the supposed charges. God is too demanding. And then finally, verse 8, the verdict of the trial. The verdict of the trial, where the narrator comes back in and says, all God really wants is for you to do these good things, walk in righteousness and so forth.
James Pasley, I'm from Butler, Alabama. I'm thankful that you have allowed people from east of the Mississippi River to come and haven't been prejudiced against us. This, like one of the ones that was mentioned earlier, is certainly not original with me, but it's an excellent lesson for us. It comes from Exodus chapter 33, titled Dwelling with God. In Exodus 33. And first of all, of course, you get a little background. The first point is that God was with Israel before Sinai. And a little background about how he brought them out of the land of Egypt. Then in verses 1 through 6 of Exodus 33, he says that he's going to send his angel with them, but he's not going to go in the midst of them or he'll destroy them. And so he said he's not going to be with them any longer because they were not with him at Mount Sinai when they were down, of course, with the idolatry. And so he says, I'll send my angel with you. Moses, though, in verses 7 through 11, the third point, Moses goes to be with God. He sets up the tabernacle outside the camp, and then he goes to meet God. And anyone who wanted to inquire of God would come outside the camp to where that tabernacle was to meet with God. Then verses 12 through 17, Moses refuses to go if God's not going to go with them. God says, I'm going to send you up there. I'll send my angel before you and give you the land I promised. And Moses said, if you're not going to go, if your presence isn't going with us, then don't send us. And we've got too many churches that are willing to go where God's presence doesn't go. And then, of course, in verses 18 through 23, because of Moses and his dwelling with God, he's blessed by that and he gets to see God's back. Can't see God's face, but he does get to see God's back. So he gets to see more of God than anyone else ever does because of his willingness to forsake the whole nation to be with God. He wants to dwell with God.
Name is Neil Pollard from Denver, Colorado. Let me give you an outline of the book of Nehemiah. You could preach this in one lesson, but it could be actually a 13-part series if you wanted. If you want a number to 13, I'll just give you each of the chapters. I don't often alliterate, but this is an exception that seems to lay out maybe a couple of stretches. Chapter 1, number 1, the problem revealed. Chapter 2, number 2, permission requested. Number 3, the people respond. Chapter 4, precaution required. Chapter 5, the prejudice is remedied. Chapter 6, the profane are routed. Chapter 7, the post-exilic record. Chapter 8, the priests read and the people respond. Chapter 9, praise resounds. Chapter 10, the pact is renewed. Chapter 11 is the partitioning of the residences. Chapter 12, the priesthood is reviewed and the portions are required. Chapter 13, the perversions are reversed.